Okay.
We'll get on top of this eventually.
Yeah. By hour 14, we'll be... So in Kingston, how do you guys see this this double standard or this this strange zone between what?
Well, in Kingston, there is a double standard because if it's real cold in the winter and you're out there panhandling, when I've done it, people have given me lots of money. But if it comes in the summer and it's warm, they expect me to be out working. Now, what's the difference? I mean, if you can make money at one time, why can't you make money at another on the street? Why should they pick one time a year to be nicer to you, and then in the summer they think you're less, and you should be out working, that you're just a lazy bum or something? Because even if you are out working on the street, and you're not making enough, they still criticize you. And that's reality. Why can't people understand that?
Okay. So I think a general consensus that we've come to is that there is a willful blindness to a certain extent amongst mainstream society as far as how their charity is going to work. Once again, I'm going to take this opportunity to let all of our listeners know about our toll-free number, 1-866-763-4136. That's 1-866-763-4136. C'est notre numéro sans frais ici au Marathon des sans-abri à Montréal. Okay. Yes,
can
hello.
Can I say something?
Absolutely.
I want to say something about this willful blindness.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's more sinister than that. I think it's, you know, people often judge other people, and that's how they get their own sense of self-worth and self-esteem. If somebody is below them, then they've got to be better. And so, you know, if we carry no power within ourselves, then we're always looking for somebody else to be above. And so I think it's more sinister than just a willful blindness. I think it's about putting people below. I think it's about having power over instead of having our own power that we walk around the world with, that we use in the world to be decent human beings.
Okay. We have somebody new at the table here. Bonjour, monsieur.
Bonjour, bonjour. Moi, c'est Andy.
Andy,
oui.
Bienvenue au marathon.
Oui, puis j'écoute l'équation en anglais parce que je suis une anglophone, puis peut-être je suis capable de répondre pour vous autres. Je connais... So, caller, what were you talking about again? Hello?
Hello.
Was this Penny Rivinsky?
Okay.
In Nelson that you're addressing? Okay.
Okay.
And she was just talking about how the homeless are judged by people who perhaps have their own issues of self-esteem, and they're trying to make themselves feel better about themselves by putting other people down, I think.
Well, we do have a serious problem with homelessness. I'll explain my point of view because I've been homeless for a long time. I've lived on the streets. I've experienced this. I've worked. I paid taxes. I've been in every situation possible, bringing up two daughters and a son, and I find that the situation has gotten from bad to worse. And what I mean is, if the cost of living goes up 2%, then why can't we have a cost of living for the poor peoples to go up at 3%, and then we would eliminate gradually poverty in this city, in this province, and across our country, Canada. And that's why I look at that issue. There's no excuse why there's poverty in this city or in this province or anywhere else, actually.
That's right.
And what the governments are doing is that they're just paying into other issues and paying spending monies unwisely and not putting them into good programs like into education or into healthcare issues and into the poverty issues that's going on right now.
Okay. So I think what we want to progress to is, in a sense, that the government policy in the Canadian government obviously doesn't seem to jive with with the reality of homeless life. And
maybe more specifically about the three levels of government and what their responsibilities are, and how you guys as housing activists find yourself dealing with them. I'll repeat that question in French. Je vais répéter la question en français. Nous voulons discuter la question des trois niveaux du gouvernement ici en Canada, fédéral, provincial et municipal, puis comment ces niveaux réagissent entre eux-mêmes et comment vous autres, comme activistes, doivent travailler pour les essayer de les forcer à faire quelque chose. Alors, Richard, je te donne la parole.
Bien, souvent, ce qui arrive, c'est que chaque palier de gouvernement, il se renvoie à balle. Ils disent, bon, le municipal, il dit, c'est parce qu'on n'a pas assez d'argent du provincial. Le provincial, ben là, il dit, c'est à cause du Canada anglais qui veut limiter le fédéral, là, qui veut pas investir au Québec, blablabla, les paiements de transfert, toutes ces affaires-là. Puis là, finalement, nous autres, si on veut faire bouger les affaires, bien, la seule affaire qu'on peut faire, en tout cas, nous autres, on a pris des moyens il y a une couple d'années. On avait fait comme des occupations de logements dans le quartier Hochelaga-Maisonneuve parce qu'il y avait des propriétaires qui, en pleine crise du logement, refusaient de louer à des locataires. Et nous autres, on s'est dit, ben on va occuper ces logements-là, puis on demandait, ben transformer ces logements-là en logements sociaux. Le propriétaire, il était irresponsable, il les a pas mis en location, bien, transformez-les en logement social. Sauf, là, la ville a pas bougé, sauf qu'elle a comme forcé quand même le propriétaire à les louer. Bon. Fait qu'à un moment donné, il faut y aller par le fait accompli, il faut mener des luttes, puis c'est de même qu'on réussit peut-être à les faire bouger. Autrement, bien, c'est correct d'aller discuter en partie, mais c'est insuffisant. Le lobbying, c'est vraiment... C'est pas ça qui va payer le plus. C'est quand qu'on va avoir un rapport de force puis qu'on va les mettre devant le fait accompli.
I'll translate that into English. Richard says that there's a lot of passing the buck between the different levels of government. So city government will say, we can't do anything because we need money from the provincial government. And then here in Quebec, the provincial government will blame Anglophone Ottawa for not supporting them. So that sort of leaves everyone in a safe situation where they don't have to... do anything. And he says here in town, his group has taken actions against city government because in his neighborhood there were buildings that were not being rented out despite the fact that there was a housing crisis. People wanted to live in those buildings and the landlords were actually refusing to rent out the buildings. And so eventually the city did force these landlords to rent out their buildings so that people could live in them. But that only happened because people took real action. They were out on the streets and protesting. And so, therefore, lobbying has doesn't have minimal effect, but it needs to be supplemented, definitely, I think, by more, by stronger action.
Ouais, peut-être pour compléter par rapport aux interventions des trois paliers de gouvernement.
S'il vous plaît.
C'est bon de rappeler que le gouvernement fédéral a cessé d'investir dans le logement social en 93-94. Ça a commencé avec les conservateurs et les libéraux ont achevé le dégât, malgré une promesse d'investir dans le logement social. Le gouvernement provincial du Québec en a profité pour se désinvestir lui aussi dans le logement social. Et par le fait même, les municipalités aussi. Quoique Montréal a fait un petit programme de logement social qui a duré un an, mais une municipalité n'a pas les moyens financiers d'un gouvernement supérieur, comme soit un gouvernement provincial ou le gouvernement fédéral. Il y a eu beaucoup de pressions qui ont été faites pour qu'il y ait des investissements dans le logement social. Le gouvernement du Québec, à un moment donné, a répondu à ces pressions-là, mais évidemment, c'était insuffisant. C'est pas avec 1300 logements par année qu'on peut réussir à combler le manque en termes de logements sociaux. Et le fédéral, qui avait juré que jamais il ne réinvestirait de l'argent dans le logement, a commencé à réinvestir il y a deux ans dans un programme, quoique très, très poche, très mauvais, mais il a commencé quand même à réinvestir. Ce qui fait que si on maintient des pressions assez fortes, et des pressions de toute nature, là, je pense qu'on peut réussir quand même à renverser la vapeur. Si le fédéral n'a pas investi pendant 10 ans et que là, tout d'un coup, il commence à réinvestir, c'est quand même quelque chose d'avoir gagné ça, même si c'est très peu, très minime et pas fantastique comme programme et comme montant d'argent. Au niveau provincial, c'est la même chose. Que le fédéral mette de l'argent ou pas, il faut faire des pressions pour que le gouvernement provincial mette de l'argent aussi dans les programmes de logement social. Au niveau municipal, la question est indifférente parce que les municipalités n'ont pas les moyens financiers pour mettre sur place des programmes de logements sociaux. Par contre, une grande ville comme Montréal, c'est elle qui doit appliquer les programmes. Donc, il faut faire en sorte qu'il n'y ait pas d'enfargement dans la bureaucratie municipale pour que les logements puissent se livrer. Et ça, c'est important. Mais il y a d'autres trucs, par contre, que la ville peut faire et qu'elle fait plus ou moins, c'est d'intervenir auprès des propriétaires qui entretiennent mal leur logement. C'est faire en sorte qu'il y ait assez d'inspecteurs pour faire en sorte que les logements insalubres soient rénovés et aux frais du propriétaire, quitte à la limite à exproprier le propriétaire. Et la ville a le droit d'exproprier un propriétaire, c'est inscrit dans sa charte. Et ça, la ville doit le faire de façon systématique. Mais elle ne le fait pas encore. Il y a des pressions qui se font à ce sens-là de temps en temps, mais ça devrait être fait. Et exproprier un propriétaire, garder le logement, le transformer en logement social, et là, il y aurait quelque chose qui pourrait se faire d'intéressant.
Et Jean-Claude, j'ai une question sur ce problème. Est-ce que les municipalités peuvent aussi passer des règlements pour encourager les développeurs de nouveaux bâtiments de faire des plans pour... Les gens de...
À faible revenu?
À faible revenu pour les donner des logements dans leur nouveau bâtisse.
La municipalité aurait les moyens de le faire, quoique je ne suis pas certain que ce soit une bonne chose. Parce que si un promoteur privé dans un complexe, mettons un building de 40 logements, conserve, mettons, 10% de ces logements pour les personnes à faible revenu, ça va demeurer quand même une propriété privée. Et ça ne sera pas quelque chose qui va être stable pour l'avenir. C'est quelque chose qui pourrait se transformer rapidement. Et la personne, le locataire qui habite ce logement, qui pourrait être adapté à ses moyens financiers, pourrait le perdre facilement au gré des politiques gouvernementales. Tandis qu'un logement social,
c'est
stable, à moins évidemment qu'un gouvernement décide de tout raser et de vendre au privé, ce qui est plus difficile quand même.
OK. Translate?
I'm just going to quickly translate the... First things that Jean-Claude was talking about, basically about the fact that in 1993-1994, again, this is translating what Jean-Claude was talking about earlier, in 1993-1994, how the federal government had offered funds to cities to be able to improve the situation, but that basically exonerated the provincial government from having to basically donate funds or to give funds towards this project. Unfortunately, as a result, it was only sort of a band-aid solution due to the fact that municipalities don't have the capital to be able to continue projects such as this. And only very recently has another set of funding come, I guess, to the city of Montreal to be able to provide, 1,300 new housing units a year for... basically to improve the situation. Unfortunately, on a municipal level, this is not sustainable. So quickly, we're going to have Richard comment a bit on this, and then we're going to go to Kingston to assess the situation in Ontario.
OK. Je voulais juste... en tout cas, je pense que la municipalité il pourrait aussi intervenir sur un autre dossier, c'est au niveau de la question... la construction des condominiums au niveau de l'émission des permis. Là, actuellement, il y a un certain moratoire qui existe au niveau de la conversion de logements en condos, mais il est mal appliqué. On l'a vu à un moment donné, on est déjà allé poser des questions dans un conseil d'arrondissement. Là, c'est une, puis comment qu'on appelle ça, le maire? Ou comment
le conseiller.
Le conseiller d'arrondissement, en tout cas, il avait répondu qu'effectivement, il pouvait faire de la conversion en condo facilement, malgré qu'en principe, il y avait un moratoire, là, en tout cas. Mais aussi, nous, ce qu'on réclame, la DDS, c'est un moratoire complet sur la construction de condos, tant et aussi longtemps qu'il n'y aura pas... qu'on va être en situation de crise du logement. OK? Parce qu'on se dit, souvent, il y a des beaux terrains, puis ça prend bien du temps à construire du logement social, des... Ça peut prendre 2-3 ans pour l'émission de permis. Ça peut être très long, là, quand même.
Entre le début d'un projet et la construction finale, ça peut prendre 2 ans, 2 ans et demi.
Ben, c'est ça. Fait que là, pendant ce temps-là, à cause que ça, les délais sont bien longs, le promoteur de logement privé qui voit le terrain, lui, il se garoche dessus. Puis les condos, lui, ça prend pas de temps à construire. S'il mettrait un moratoire complet sur la construction de condos, ben peut-être que ça forcerait le gouvernement à en construire davantage du logement social. Ça, il y a le pouvoir quand même au niveau de l'émission des permis, là, la ville. C'est un pouvoir qu'ils ont. Pourquoi qu'ils ne l'exercent pas?
OK. Richard is saying that municipalities have a lot of power to influence the situation of housing here in Montreal. So that, for instance, he's suggesting the municipal government here should put a moratorium on condo conversion and condo construction, because condominiums can be built very quickly and it takes longer to fund affordable housing. So that if the condo moratorium was put on, it would put more pressure on the government to build affordable housing. And also, as Jean-Claude was saying, that the city should also be forcing owners to maintain their buildings properly and renovate them when required, and when they don't, expropriate them and convert them into social housing.
Okay, we're going to go now to the Kingston Homeless Coalition. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Lovely. Okay.
There's a lot of band-aid solutions, like was said before.
Mm-hmm. So how do you feel?
Because, I mean, if there's empty buildings. Okay, go ahead.
Well, basically.
How do I feel?
Right, okay. Well, basically, we're talking about these the three levels of government and how certain bureaucracy tends to get in the way of their responsibilities, of their legal responsibilities and financial responsibilities towards creating sustainable housing and affordable housing. How do you see the situation in Ontario?
Because they'll build these quick-build places for low rentals, but they won't stop at increasing taxes to landlords and then not giving enough money to the poorer people to be able to rent places. Instead, they'll just coordinate both ways, getting tenants against landlords, because they won't give money to put that the landlords can afford to do repairs on buildings, but they'll sure come in and check it out. And then if someone poor moves in, if there's one bit of damage done, they'll lay it on a poor person, and yet there's no money supplied either way from government supplies to help both come together and equal it out.
Okay.
And that's the way it is in Kingston.
Is there a method for people in Kingston and Ontario to defend their rights, say if they're being penalized either for not being able to afford where they live, or for if a landlord chooses to evict them on questionable terms, is there a method of recourse that people can go to?
Well, the only other recourse you could take is to go to I forget what they call it. It's where you can go to a community service that helps to put out reasons to them why something has happened and state why it wasn't good.
So in other words...
Yet, if... Go ahead.
Yeah, in other words, what you're saying is that we have, like here in Montreal, we do have community centers, we do have committees, we do have organizations that could act as an abattoir for you in case you do have a run-in with your landlord,
yeah.
You know, for like back rent, let's say $50 or whatever, he wants to evict you for the hideous things. We do have people at here in
exactly.
Montreal that are standing up and fighting for the poor people's rights. And I don't know about Kingston,
right?
How they do it, but I know here in Montreal we do have abattoirs for us.
Okay, and
well, it's pretty well the same here. You can go up in front of it and speak.
Okay.
And do they do you any good, or is it a useful service?
In a lot of cases, It can do good, but if the landlord has a solid ground to stand on, the renter doesn't have a hope in hell.
Okay, so in other words, you're more or less saying that, how can I put it, is that the rental, well, the governments at all levels, city, municipal, all governments at level are more or less going to sleep with the, going to sleep in bed with the, how would you call it, with the landlords associations. They have no chance of winning.
Well, you could more or less say that, yeah, but the landlords' associations now, when I was at the meeting today of the Room for One, they are trying to get together with us more now to find a solution. But it's a slow, one day at a time thing. It ain't going to happen overnight.
No, it's an issue about poverty. It's an issue about the money's being wasted. And that's why we got so many problems with housing
exactly.
across Canada. And, you know, like I said, if the percentage rate of like the cost of living goes up, nobody's checks are going up, are they? And so everything else is going up, like the cost of living. Like, for instance, your rent is going up, your hydro bills are going up, your telephone bills, your food bills are going up. So, but your checks aren't. And that's
exactly.
at all levels.
Where's the money going to come from to cover it?
And that's it. And that's where the problems start. And like I said, here in Montreal alone, we have, close to 3,000 homeless peoples trying to do the best that they can. But the system won't work
right.
for us. But I'll give you an example. In percentages and money alone, in my city, what's happening now, we got a merger issue, okay, about merging all these cities together. But Mayor Trombley can have a budget of $195 million a year just to pay employees, okay? Now you have it gone from $195 million, okay, in the first year that he's in office, okay, to $27 million in the second year, okay, to another $13 million last year, which brings up a whooping 24% of the increase of... payments to the benefit packages to the bureaucratic elite, to his administration, and not to the peoples. And our money is being wasted here because what they're doing is they're pocketing us money for themselves and not for for the peoples of Montreal. And $60 million to me is a lot of money that's been spent for the most ridiculous, stupidest things, like paying off people to fight against mergers, for instance, at $800 a day. Okay. And it's cost the city of Montreal $60 million so far just to buy out these mergers. And that's where homelessness is coming, because they won't put the damn money back into the people's housing. They won't put the money back into schooling. They will not put the money back into health care for the homeless and the sick people. And that's where the problem is. That's what the whole reality of this show is about. It's about homelessness, and it's about our governments running out of monies, okay, for the most stupidest, ridiculous things that shouldn't be. And I, as a homeless person, or was, okay, right now I'm not, but I was for a few years, okay,
right.
I did go out and work at $7.50 an hour. I was a squatter at Overdale with my family. My children lived there, okay, and I got a real robbed deal. And I'm a voter on top of that, but there's no more respect for the voters, none whatsoever. And this is what the problem is. You know, they want to spend money. They don't want to give it back.
The government won't account for where one penny of it goes.
And that's it. That's where the problem is. And we're fighting for the housing rights in this city. We're, I'm going to stand by the housing activists, and I'm going to stand by my right to defend myself and get off the street, because I have no choice but to live on the street. I can't afford to pay rent, and I can't afford to pay electricity bills, and that's
okay.
what the whole darn problem is in this city. And I'm being honest here. I got the facts in front of me.
And yet,
my mayor of Montreal, Mayor Trombley, turns around, and he gets a television show at $65,000 at the taxpayers' expenses. And this is another true fact, ladies and gentlemen, whether we like it or not. You don't want to hear the truth, you don't want to hear the reality, but this is what's going on, and I am tired of it. I'm tired of being robbed okay? And I'm tired of having to pick up my children off the street every other day and have problems feeding them, and I work for it, okay? I work at $7.50. I pay taxes, and hell, they won't listen to me. I know. I'm sorry. I don't know. It's not a question of me being a lazy parent here. I'm not a lazy parent. I want to go out and have a job, and but is it right for me to go and work, okay? Is it right for anybody to go out and work and then come home to nothing, to live on the street? It's awfully expensive. It's awfully cold out here, and people are dying. People are going hungry. Our neighbors are going hungry. Why? Because of the stupid merger city that we're having right now. That's what this issue is all about, a waste of monies.
It's called lost incentive.
There we go.
I think there's a... Obviously, we are expressing that there's our government has a problem with priorities, obviously, in terms of who it chooses to give money to. We can come up with so many examples of misguided funds, of misguided priorities. Now, we have about 5 minutes left. Now, I'd really like to ask Penny Ravinsky out there in Nelson how the different levels of government there are treating their responsibilities.
Penny, are you still there?
Okay.
I guess things aren't going out too well out there. I think we lost Penny. So I think we have another minute or so to wrap up.
Yeah, in fact, we do have one more minute. I would like to remind people to give us a call on our toll-free number. That's 1-866-763-4136. Now, obviously... we don't think the government is making its proper efforts. For our panelists here, out on the street, outside Café sur la Rue, quelles solutions existent qui ne sont pas implémentées?
Qui ne sont pas comment?
Qui ne sont pas implémentées.
Appliquées.
Appliquées, c'est ça.
Ah, mon Dieu. C'est parce que...
We'll have to be very quick.
Parce qu'il y a différents niveaux de solutions. Il y a des solutions à la fois gouvernementales et il y a des solutions qui sont directement impliquées par les personnes. Par exemple, on peut mettre un programme de HLM sur pied, mais on peut aussi squatter des immeubles vacants. Il y a deux types de solutions.
I'm really sorry. We're actually hitting at the end of our hour. And, okay... Homelessness without reserve is what's happening on hour 7 on the Homeless Marathon, sans abri, sans réserve. In the next hour, we will hear First Nations activists working in Montreal talk with First Nation activists in Nunavut, a discussion looking at homelessness as a reality for both urban and rural communities in Canada. We thank you very much. You're listening to the Homelessness Marathon on CKUT 90.3 FM.
And before we go any further, we would like to encourage people to phone in, so don't forget about our toll-free line. Our toll-free line here is 1-866-763-4136. If you hear something that intrigues you, if you hear something that makes you want to say something, give us a call, and we'll put you on air. That's the whole point of this nationwide homelessness marathon. Notre ligne de sans-frais de téléphone, c'est le 1-866-763-4136. And lastly, one more thing. This is a nationwide homelessness marathon, so I'd like to let you know that there are over 30 campus community stations across this country who are broadcasting this simultaneously along with us right across the country. We're sending out an internet feed. They're picking it up. They're rebroadcasting it. We have stations all over this country, such as CFCR in Saskatchewan, CJLY in BC, and I'm going to leave it at that. Thanks, everyone.
Hello, and welcome to From the Margins. This is an attempt to provide a medium of voice for those living in poverty and those working to challenge the institutional origins of it, as well as the daily manifestations. Voices on the margins, experiences of those people who this show is dedicated to, challenging stereotypes like they're poor because they're lazy, or it's their own fault for being a single mother. They are people, not numbers. The experiences are diverse. Listen to the voices, and let the mainstream bureaucratic stereotypes melt away.
Hello, my name is Asif Rashid. The subject of the following is challenging poverty in Fredericton. Coming up, you'll hear a conversation between myself and Dan Weston of the Fredericton Anti-Poverty Organization.
But not until more and more people get together to fight all of the various aspects of the poverty situation will things change. And as John Lennon said many, many years ago, war is over if you want it. Well, let me tell you, poverty would be over if you wanted it to. All it takes is the political will, because there's certainly enough riches and resources in this country.